In last month's podcast, we looked at how an increasing number of refugees are living in urban environments and cited the example of Lebanon as somewhere where this was happening. In the last month, ODI Director Kevin Watkins has visited Lebanon to look at how the growing number of Syrian refugees in the country are affecting the school system. In a report, Education Without Borders, Kevin sets out a plan to avoid the sort of business-as-usual approach which he warns could lead to a lost generation of children failing to receive an education. The report was commissioned by the NGO A World at School. It states that if Lebanon's refugee children were a country, they would have the world's lowest enrollment rate. A meeting was convened in New York by the UN Special Envoy on Global Education, Gordon Brown, to discuss whether the plan could become reality. It's received a favourable response from UN agencies, including UNICEF and the UNHCR. I spoke with Kevin Watkins about why this is such a pressing issue and how we might go about solving it. I began by asking him why he decided to undertake the trip.
Well, I was invited by the Lebanese government to go and have a look at the situation in education facing Syrian refugees, and by the UN Special Envoy for Education, Gordon Brown, the former Prime Minister. And the concern is that, of course, there are many of these refugees are children, and their children have already had a really hard time. You know, they've been uprooted from their homes. They've missed a lot of education already. They're arriving in a strange country. And Lebanon is a very small country dealing with a very big refugee crisis. You know, this is probably the biggest refugee crisis since the Second World War. Lebanon is right on the doorstep. It's really under an enormous amount of pressure politically, socially and economically in trying to tackle the refugee problem. And what I was trying to do was working with others to look at what could be done in education to help Lebanon adjust and to ensure that these kids who have suffered enough don't lose out on their education.
We live in a world that unfortunately isn't a stranger to crises. What is it about the situation in Lebanon, even compared to countries like Turkey and Jordan, which have also absorbed quite a few refugees? What makes the situation in Lebanon particularly different and need extra attention?
Well, I think what hasn't been sufficiently understood in the rest of the world, that Lebanon is a tiny country. It's smaller than Wales. It's got a population of around 4 million. And it's already absorbed around 1 million refugees. Now, if you try and imagine what that would mean in the United Kingdom, you're talking about the United Kingdom absorbing the whole of the population of Belgium or more. Or to put it differently, it's like the schools in London with the same resources, the same buildings, having to absorb all of the kids living in Manchester and Birmingham, as well as the kids who are already in school. So the fact that it's a tiny country, that one in four of the country are already refugees from Syria, and there's no sign of the flow of refugees abating. So yeah, this is an issue that's going to get worse over time. It's a country that's desperately struggling with resources. You know, how do you absorb an increase in population on that scale? How do you deliver health services? How do you provide shelter? How do you provide health and education? And it's absolutely clear, you know, I mean, Lebanon's not a poor country. You know, we're not talking about South Sudan here or the Democratic Republic of Congo, but it's not a country that is equipped to absorb this many refugees this quickly. And if the international community doesn't step in and help, there's a real danger that we could see a social and political implosion in Lebanon.
There are systems to deal with these sorts of crises. You talk about the international system needing to step in and help. Has it not done that at all?
Well, it would be overstating it to say it hasn't done it at all. The humanitarian community has moved, it has mobilised resources. The UNHCR, the UN High Commission for Refugees, is providing support to part of the refugee problem. We're seeing organisations like UNICEF stepping in. And there's a whole range of NGOs that are operating on the ground, often in very difficult environments. The problem is twofold. The first is the scale and the pace of change. Nobody has seen anything on quite this scale happen quite this quickly. And so, you know, part of the problem is the response time. And secondly, the humanitarian system is there really to deal with emergencies, with the emergency aspect of the refugee crisis. What we're moving towards is a very long-term emergency type of problem. These people are still going to be there next year. They're probably going to be there in 2 years. Now, how do you fund a response to a 2 to 3 year problem when you're dealing with emergency financing response mechanisms? You know, 6 month emergency appeals, 3 month emergency appeals. So there's a big misalignment between the resources that are available and the needs on the ground.
During your trip, you spent some time in Beirut. You also travelled to the Bekaa Valley. Can you tell us a bit about some of the experiences that you had and the things that you saw on the trip that make this such a compelling cause for you?
Well, the thing you're always struck by, I think, when you speak to refugees is the extraordinary resilience they show in the face of what are overwhelmingly difficult circumstances. And I spoke to a lot of parents in the Bekaa Valley and to a lot of children. And one of the things that really struck me, these are people who have been uprooted. I spoke to a lot of people from rural areas just outside of Damascus who had seen terrible violence, who had arrived in Lebanon with virtually nothing. The first thing they start doing is trying to rebuild their lives. And as part of that, they're absolutely desperate to get their kids into school. And the innovation and the ambition and the resilience they show in trying to get their kids into school is very moving, actually. These are people, they'll go out there in groups of 10 to 20 parents and try and hire a teacher. They'll try and find a small classroom somewhere where they can get their kids into school. They'll pull together to get some books for their kids. And it's really important, I think, because the problem is so enormous, because the numbers are so big, it's very easy to forget the personal human tragedies that are behind this. I spoke to kids of 12 who'd lost brothers and sisters, who'd lost parents, who were trying to keep their opportunities for learning alive. And I think the international community has responsibilities here. We talk about the right to education, we talk about the rights of refugees, but in order to make those rights real, we need to put resources on the ground and we need delivery mechanisms that make it possible for kids to learn.
We both know that there are major challenges in delivering effective education in poor and ill-resourced countries at the best of times. We're talking about some of the worst of times for people in Lebanon. How do you go about starting to build a plan that does deliver education in this situation?
Well, the specific problem that Lebanon has is that it has a very small public education system. Actually, most of the education in Lebanon is private, and only something like 20 to 25% of kids in the country are going to public schools. Most of the refugees who are being registered by the UN agencies who are coming into Lebanon are desperately poor. They need support. That's why they're registering as refugees. And the fact is that there are something like 300,000 kids, Lebanese kids, in Lebanon's public schools. And these schools now have to absorb something like 350,000 Syrian refugee children. In other words, the school population has to double. And unlike the situation in Jordan or in Turkey, where many of the refugees are being concentrated in camps, in Lebanon, the authorities, because of the experience with the Palestinian camps in the past, are very concerned not to have big refugee settlements operating separately. And they're trying to absorb these kids into the public education system. But of course, that puts immense pressure on resources. Now, there are various things that can be done to mitigate those pressures. You can go over to what are called double shift systems, where you run one set of classes in the morning and another set of classes in the afternoon. Some people even argue you could go to a triple shift system where you do some classes in the early evening. There's a certain amount that you could do through community centres, recognising that you can't go to double shift overnight, but you can hire the local community hall. You could hire a Syrian teacher to go and provide some basic education in that community hall. But all of this, it takes resources, it takes technical ability, you need books. And there's an additional problem in the Lebanese case, because the curriculum in the Lebanon is taught from very early ages in English and French, as well as Arabic. In Syria, kids learn solely in Arabic. And so you've got kids coming into Lebanon, 8, 9, 10 years old, who may have lost 1 or 2 years education already. They've been through traumatic circumstances, and now they have to learn English or French before they can restart their education. And you've got agencies like Save the Children and Islamic Relief who are running what are called accelerated learning program classes, trying to give kids basic English and basic French so that they can get back into the education system. But again, this takes teachers, it takes books, it takes classrooms, it takes desks. And these things, you don't drop out of thin air. They have to be paid for. And many of the agencies that are equipped to scale up their operations, like Norwegian Relief, like Save the Children, like Islamic Relief, just don't have the resources on the scale they need them. And this is really something that the international community has to step in and get behind their efforts.